silver spoons.
The Devil's Advocates.
Hoping to find.
Making radio
we're two of
great
a kind.
Again.
Make it a go. Make it a pro together.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. You even caught me by surprise. Fancy Brand, the very talented producer. And I got a very talented guest joining me right now. He is John Nichols. From the Nation, from the Cap Times here locally in Madison. John, welcome back to the big show.
I'm feeling big. I'm on the big show. It's
you
excellent.
Are on the really big show. John, I appreciate you doing so. The really big show here in the state of Wisconsin is going on in Kenosha. And it's been a hell of a show, this trial, John. It's been a surprisingly good show. And I don't mean that with glee, but you know, sort of the fireworks of this trial, John, it's been unexpected. So let's talk about where many of them emanate from, and it's the judge. And I forget if it's Schroeder or Schrader, but Judge Schroeder or Schrader certainly been a demonstrative sort. Let's put it that way, John. How would you put it, sir?
He has definitely added a chapter to the now very long record of transgressions by judges in Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin historically had a judiciary which was probably what it's supposed to be, and that is boring. And unfortunately, over the last decade, we have had a lot of incidents in our Supreme Court mostly, where our judges have been revealed to be anything but boring. I think back to the incident where Judge Prosser attacked Judge Ann Walsh Bradley.
A little choking between colleagues.
It was pretty bad. And, of course, then the rest of the conservatives on the court let Prosser off the hook. So they didn't hold him to account when he got caught out and called out for it. So we've had, you know, it's not like we are unfamiliar with judges who kind of step beyond the bounds of what one might think of as appropriate. But with the judge down in Kenosha, it's another thing altogether, because here you have a judge in the national spotlight. It's not just us. I mean, this is literally the trial being run live on the cable channels, followed by all the national and international media. And again and again and again, he has engaged in behaviors that were baseline embarrassing. I mean, there's no doubt of that, but far more concerning, suggested if not a bias, at least a lack of concern about appearing biased. And that's added up to some pretty troublesome stuff. It's pretty clear he does not like the prosecuting attorney. He's interrupted the prosecuting attorney. He has yelled at him, shut him down, prevented him from, you know, following what would seem to be reasonable lines of questioning. He has made a number of decisions that seem to be detrimental to the prosecution, especially right at the start, saying that you can't call the victims of a shooting spree victims. And so I would suggest he's a pretty troublesome judge.
John Nichols, let me ask you, call it quaint, call it quirky. What do you think of Judge Schrader's habit of allowing the defendant, and he did it again this morning in the Rittenhouse, allows the defendant to pick by lottery this little turn thing, and it's like bingo, and he gets to pick and exclude alternative jurors. Do you think it added to the character of this proceeding, John?
I think it was surreal. And it was not the only surreal thing. I mean, it's hard to run a list of all the surreal developments, but let's start there and work our way back. You know, the idea of having the defendant pick the names out of a drum to determine who the 12 jurists would be and then to effectively dismiss the additional ones, it's archaic, it's unprofessional, and it creates this bizarre relationship between the defendant and the jury, right? Because that is actually in this part of the process of choosing. this is something that should have been done by a court clerk. It's absurd that it would be done this way. And frankly, as I suggested, it's surreal. It's not the only thing. Yesterday, when the judge was reading through or reviewing his orders to the jury, his instructions to the jury, he stopped in the middle of it and said, well, I don't like what I'm saying here. And then he went silent for a long period of time. It was weird. Everybody's watching him. And then he like opens up a discussion about how he should develop the instructions to the jury. And one lawyer would say, well, I think it should be this. And he goes, oh, that sounds good. And then another lawyer on the other side would say something else. And he'd say, oh, that speaks to me. You know, and I mean, you just got the impression of a judge who is, you know, hasn't put a lot of thought into, you know, one of the most important trials that will ever take place in Wisconsin. So it's, yeah, I think at almost every turn, he seems to be not in control of his own, you know, thinking, not thinking through where this thing might proceed and frankly about the image that he's presenting, not just to the broader world, which is watching this on camera, but also to the jury, because again and again, his signals in the courtroom have been, to my view, very negative for the prosecution and relatively positive for the defense. And that's just not, that's not the, the messaging that ought to come out of a judge.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine guest. He is John Nichols from The Nation, from the Cap Times. We are talking about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and the jury is out. We're waiting to find out if there will be a verdict today. But we started our discussions with the Honorable Judge Bruce Schroeder, the judge in this courthouse in Kenosha. And John, he sort of had a boomer moment. During the course of deliberations, they were talking about, you know, a video screen blow up, you know, so effectively they could better see what was being represented. They touched, blew up the screen effectively, like we all do on our cell phones, our iPads. And you know, the judge readily admitted he didn't understand the technology and he was a bad source. My colleagues here at the station, they debated this point a little bit, you know, not to be ageist, John, but this was sort of an important thing. If the judge can't understand the tech, shouldn't he ask someone?
Yeah, maybe ask someone before getting in a situation where he's struggling with it, and not have these long discussions from the bench, by the way, about how to use his cell phone and how to do all sorts of other things. But I'm not, again, yeah, I would agree with you on not wanting to be ageist about this and not wanting to, you know, that's not the problem here. It's a deeper problem, and that is a judge who doesn't seem to be very concerned about presenting a clear sense of legal authority in the courtroom and frankly beyond the courtroom. And so again and again, he comes off as bumbling, disengaged sometimes when he's sitting up there reading his cookie magazine, or, you know, like making off-color jokes about ordering Asian food. There's very little dignity to this. And, you know, I guess at some fundamental level, judges aren't required to be dignified. These are elected positions. And I guess, you know, anybody can get in them if they meet the baseline qualifications. But in a case like this, I think he really, by his lack of preparation, his lack of focus, has undermined confidence in the process. And that's a very, very dangerous thing, a very troublesome thing in a case that is so high profile.
John, yesterday, the judge Schroeder made a sort of a legal opinion, the ruling of the day in regards to the gun charge. A minor carrying a dangerous weapon is against the law under Wisconsin state law. And he found some sort of a 16 to 17 year old carve out. If the length of the, you know, if it was a long gun and they were hunting or at a gun range, which they were neither, but somehow the judge made his own interpretation of the law and made a ruling from the bench and dismissed the lesser charge. John, what was your thought on that?
I mean, why don't you do that at the start of the trial, right? I mean, why would you do that at this late stage when the attorneys have argued, you know, from a variety, their different perspectives on the whole thing, and also when you're really determining what the range of options are for the jury? Again, this is a lack of focus, a lack of preparation, a lack of planning for how to put together a thoughtful and organized trial. And remember, in the most crass way of putting it, you know, the judge is sort of a producer, if you will, of a trial. The judge's job is to make sure that a trial proceeds in a rational, fair trajectory. And it's fine for a judge to be tough. It's fine for a judge to be directive and intense, even at times. So all of that is appropriate. But what is inappropriate and what is troubling is a judge who, you know, is quite bombastic and quite direct. I mean, he yells at people and does stuff, but doesn't seem to have a clear plan for the progression of the trial. And again, I'll go back to when he was doing jury instructions on Monday, my mistake. And when he was doing the jury instructions, anybody who watched that, their jaw dropped. Because you had a situation where a judge who is, you know, supposedly worked the weekend, put together a really strong set of jury instructions, he's reviewing them with the attorneys. If the attorneys themselves objected, that's where you have a discussion. But he himself, in the midst of it, said, "Whoa, man, I don't really like what I've done here." And it's sort of like it just occurred to him that he'd done a lousy job. And that's not what you want to see at the critical juncture in a trial.
Well, John Nichols, there's still a critical question left unanswered, the request for a mistrial with prejudice. And I had seen it speculated by legal scholars, perhaps this judge is waiting to see if Rittenhouse were to get an acquittal. Well, then the question is moot. Rittenhouse is effectively off the hook, but should there a conviction come down from this jury? I mean, literally, there is still an ace up this judge's sleeve. If he wants to affect the outcome, John, that'd be a hell of an affect to the outcome.
Yeah, but I don't think that's likely. In fairness, I doubt very much that would happen. I think.
Then why no decision, John? Why put it off?
Yeah,
why beleaguer it?
I understand what you're saying. This guy's so disorganized, in my opinion, he may have forgotten about it. It did come up briefly at a certain point, but it seemed like the lawyers themselves weren't too interested in it. And my sense is that now that the judge has thrown it to the jury, if he were to declare a mistrial at that point, it would be even to my view, and you hear me, I'm very critical of this guy. It would be to my view beyond the realm of I would hope beyond the realm of possibility. I think that you were now into that next stage where this has been thrown to the jury. The jury is going to ideally make a judgment on it. Where you could see things get blown up or thrown out is at the point where if the jury comes back and says they can't reach a conclusion. And that happens at times. Now, that becomes a real test for a judge, because a capable judge has to make a determination, perhaps polling the jury, kind of hopefully having some feel for it, on whether to tell the jury, go back and work harder, you know, go back at this, do more, or to say, okay, I recognize this is not going to happen, and so that they do not reach a conclusion. That's a really critical juncture in a trial, and it asks for a lot of perspective and a lot of, you know, skill on the part of a judge. And
John Nichols.
I'm not sure this judge is up to that.
Hold that thought, man. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. My fine guest, John Nichols from The Nation, talking the Rittenhouse trial and judge. We'll be right back.
I've sentenced boys younger than you to the gas chamber. Didn't want to do it. Felt I owed it.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
How about a Fresca?
Listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
U.S. Senator Ron Johnson joins us on the phone. Regarding our military influence, aren't we selling arms right now to Saudi Arabia? And aren't they using, you know, munitions that they have purchased from us in their war?
And if we weren't, and if we weren't doing that, they'd be, because they've got plenty of money, they'll buy less precise munitions from other people, and the bloodshed would be worse.
Well, the blood might be on someone else's hands then, Ron.
Well, I'm going to talk to you about that, Ron.
You're listening to the radio show your mother warned you about, The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to The Devil's Advocates radio show. We've got a fine guest. He stuck around. I appreciate him doing so. He is John Nichols with The Nation. John, going to ask you to read the tea leaves in this Rittenhouse trial. Jury is deliberating right now. They didn't come back. They didn't rush back and say not guilty in the first couple hours. So obviously there is serious consideration of these charges. So here's my question, Nichols. Guilty or not guilty?
Here's my answer. I don't know. I'm not going to. I've watched hundreds of trials. I've covered the courts as a reporter. But more importantly, I grew up in the courthouses of Racine and Kenosha County. My dad was the court commissioner down there and an assistant district attorney. And so I know the territory pretty well. And what I can tell you is this, that your assessment is right, that if they didn't turn around immediately and say not guilty, you know, that's a good thing because it means that they're deliberating, right? They're taking this seriously. At least somewhat seriously. Now, the first day for a jury is usually a time of a bit of bureaucracy. The folks come in and they review the instructions of the jury. They may choose someone to be the leader of the jury, or at least to organize the conversations. They may actually even set some rules for themselves on how to proceed. Then they're going to get into deliberations. The longer the deliberation goes on in this trial, I think the more likely it is that you get to some kind of conviction. Now, if you want me to speculate about, you know, the kind of where the signals are with this trial and where things seem to have gone, I think that an awful lot about this trial, both in the judge's approach and the structures of it, have tended to favor the defense. And so it is within the realm of possibility that you see, that Kyle Rittenhouse get off with a much lesser charge than I think has been proven against him. That is within the realm of possibility. What's interesting, though, and I think you have to put this into the mix, I thought that the prosecuting attorney did a strikingly strong close. And it was far superior to the close by the defense. And if it is possible, you know, as we see in courtroom dramas, if it is possible to sway a jury with a powerful closing argument, and that is the point of the closing argument, right? It's the last thing the jury hears from each side. If it is possible to sway a jury with a powerful closing argument, I think the prosecution did a pretty good job there. And so I think we find ourselves in a place where there is the possibility that an honest jury would reach a decision, I think, that Kyle Rittenhouse violated laws and should be convicted of some crime. Then the question becomes, what would that crime be? The judge took one of the lesser charges off the table yesterday, and that is significant because if a jury is faced with severe charges or a not guilty verdict, sometimes a jury that believes someone has done wrong still may decide not to convict because they don't want to go to the most extreme conviction. The final thing I'll throw in the mix here, though, is, and this is really important, and it's why I always say I don't know as regards the jury in a case like this. I think it's always a wrong move. although wiser people than I have speculated that Rittenhouse will get off. The reason I'm always a little cautious about this is the makeup of a jury is a very significant thing. And just as if you have one person who doesn't want to convict, that can become a huge factor with a jury. By the same token, if you have one very convincing person who does want to convict and they stick out their argument, they can also move a jury. And so I think we've got to do what I encourage people to do on election night, and that is wait till all the results are in.
Well, John, let's talk about the aftermath. We got 500 yeah. National Guard troops on standby. The governor of the state of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, doesn't want to get caught with his quote-unquote pants down again. This mm-hmm. has certainly mm-hmm. become a political football already. Evers' reaction to the shooting of Jacob Blake and the refusal of assistance, quote-unquote, from the Trump administration. He had dispatched 125 National Guard troops, bumped it up to 250, and then this vigilante style shooting had happened. And, mm-hmm. you know, obviously between right wing talk radio and Rebecca Clayfish, and this has been a huge political football. Evers yeah. is dispatching 500 National Guard troops. John, if this is, quote unquote, a not guilty, an unjust verdict in the eyes of many, what are you mm-hmm. expecting, sir?
Well, you had a verdict come down in the Jacob Blake case that was not a popular one with a lot of folks. And the reaction was, there was certainly anger, but it was a relatively stable circumstance. And so I wouldn't necessarily predict that there would be, you know, a lot of instability, like real big troubles. But you don't know. I mean, these are volatile times and volatile moments. And what I would suggest to you is it cuts both ways.
Yeah, I was wondering, John, would a guilty verdict perhaps, you know, trigger some violent reaction by some Trumpist, someone on the right? I mean, Joe Biden described this kid as a white supremacist. The vice president was asked to comment on Rittenhouse today. She declined. But ultimately, John, this is the red hot political, you know, hot potato football. And, you know, it's going to piss some people off no matter what the jury decides.
And also, it cuts the other way, too, that the danger of a decision not to convict Rittenhouse, the message that sends about people with guns on the streets in volatile and difficult situations is, you know, should be unsettling to everyone. And so you've got a really volatile situation, as we've said. And one of the things that strikes me is the bizarre statement. Again, we talked so much about the judge today. The bizarre statement from the judge at one point during the trial, this is not a political trial. He said that. And, you know, if he had said, I don't want this to be a political trial, or I want to try and keep politics out of this trial, that'd be fine. But to deny the politics that swirls around this trial, I think that was absurd. One of the many, many absurd proclamations from a judge who may well end up being subject to much conversation after this trial, as much as he has been during it.
John Nichols from The Nation, man, he is the new Judge Lance Ito, not you, talking about Schrader and Kenosha. John, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Hopefully a peaceful reaction to whatever the verdict may be, but John, appreciate you coming on.
Honored to be with you, my friend.
Thank you. Come back.
Take care. John Nichols.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.